message to Israel. Pakistan army is ready. Fight against Palestine is fight against whole Muslim Ummah. The final call to jihad. Inshallah. Pakistan flag over our Aqsa Masjid. Zionists be ready. We fucking rape your people. Pak army rape every fucking Jewish kafir in mouth, ass, vagina and take their rape baby for Islam. Pakistan, you rape every Israeli whore and make Pak baby to fight jihad. We kill you in every street, every forest, every desert, every lake. You cannot hide, you fucking kafir. Allahu Akbar. La hila il Allah Muhammad Rasul Allah Pakistan and Turkey together be Bam Yahud Kafir new Ottoman Empire with Pakistan and Turkey. We rape your Jewish mom. We rape every Yahud soldier, Pak army, every fucking Kafir Israeli. We fuck your woman and make sex movie on internet. We fucking rape and fuck Netanyahu in mouth and every Israeli will suck Pakistani loon Pakistan 1 million nuke on fucking Israel.
It's those two assholes.
Hello.
Those two idiots. This you saw me talking to at the third rail.
Just he doesn't want to touch the third rail.
That is the third rail. Saying white people have interest.
Third rail. The third rail here is another wonderful show on the TRS network.
And it's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
Watch out for the third rail, baby. That's high voltage.
And the opinion of this reporter, if this nation, or in fact the world, ever needed heroes, that time is now. That time is now.
Live past everybody's bedtime, this is the third rail. I'm not doing the snappy opening. It's just me and Larry tonight. We're both tired. I'm tired. I assume you're tired, Larry. But
I got one here.
Like a faggot getting thrown off a rooftop when the Taliban comes back to Kabul. This is happening.
Yes, this is episode 210 of the most huggable. Are we Taliban respecting podcast on air? Well, we maybe have been on air since 1973, the third rail, but Taliban's been probably fighting about just as long as that time period has. You know, this podcast is dedicated to the brave Mujahideen fighters who are fighting for freedom.
Yeah, truth be told, I don't know enough about that shit to really know anything, but you know, I just hate Israel and whatever. Yeah, cool. Taliban respecters we are, I guess.
So. I'm not gonna have a completely well thought out. We might as well just get into that first. I'm not gonna have a completely well thought out take on that. I'll say, and I'll just sum up, I guess, my feelings. It's always nice to see Zog take an L. However, people do need to keep in mind that the way the U.S. intelligence agent and community operates is they're going to have their hands in a couple of different pies. So I mean, we'll see what kind of gay ops and what kind of like backdoor deals they're working on with different, like trying to subvert Taliban from within. Who knows what kind of gay ops are going to be going on with all that? I mean, look at Operation Gladio. This idea that there's nobody they won't work with to, you know, keep their presence somewhere. They'll do whatever it takes. I don't know, but it is nice to see Zog take the L, and they're being embarrassed on the world stage. So, actually, I do have a take about that, but I want to let you jump in first, Larry.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's pretty much the same thing here. I like to see them, like, Zog get embarrassed. I saw a screen cap the other day that pretty much encapsulates, like, my political ideology. It's like, I don't really have any politics. I just hate America. So, like, it's like, I don't really know what a lot of my opinions are. I just know that I hate America. And, bring on the embarrassment, man. Like, let's do this.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, I also
I'm nervous to ever react happily about any development that happens in the world.
I'm once bitten, twice shy right now, because I was cheering on America, we still fumbled at the Olympics, but at the end, America still got the most gold, so I'm hesitant to ever be happy about anything ever again.
Oh yeah. Well, we got the most medals. Like, what? Did we get the most golds or just the most total medals?
Both. We actually edged out China on gold medals.
Gosh, dude, I actually hate to hear that. That kind of I had a pretty good day today, and that just like ruined it a little bit. Knocked it from like a solid 75 down to like a high 50s now.
Well, and it's
fucking
that's why,
a,
like,
man. So, that's I was why, really. I was really hoping that, like, our fucking shitty, like, nigged out team, like, just, sorry. They just.
It doesn't matter. I don't care at this point about my YouTube thing. Yeah, so China was leading in gold right up to the end, and U.S. Squeaked out at 39 gold medals and a total of 113 medals versus China's total of 88 medals. Not like, you know, not that I care about China at all, but it's just, it was so fun watching just the America face plant on the world stage day after day. And then that's why, like, I guess, you know, not to compare Olympics to the fall in Afghanistan, these are completely different situations, but it's just now I'm hesitant to, like, you know, as I'd like to see the embarrassment, I will take that much, but I'm always hesitant to read too much into it because I just don't know what's going on exactly. I especially because this today, when after church I was with my, like, I was with my family, and I heard the Fox News boomer side of my family talking about what was going on in Afghanistan, and these, you know, they are still huge Trump supporters, and it's just the way that the whole cable news thing operates is, like, you know, like, the fall of Afghanistan is something, you know, like, trying to pin this on Biden, and that this is, you know, this is a great loss to America. It's like, really? You were that, like, we've been in Afghanistan for 20 years. Like, how often have you thought about Afghanistan since 9/11?
Yeah, I want to say, like, about that too. It's like people being all mad. Like, I've talked to people close to me in my personal life as well, and, like, they've been pretty pissed off. Like, not like pissed off, but you know what I mean. Like, it's like, oh, you know, Biden really making it really embarrassing us here on the world stage and shit. But it's just like, imagine giving a shit about another country, you know, like Afghanistan at that. What, like, a lot of these people, I mean, this is like a take that you hear from, like, all over the place. But these people, no, a lot of these people that are angry couldn't even fucking point to Afghanistan on a map.
Yeah.
And Afghanistan, no, like, no one actually cares about this. They just feel like it's the thing they're supposed to care about because they see it on television.
By the way, I'm about to bring your day back up to a high 60. Somebody in the chat actually points out, this is a great point, that if you count all of the European medals together, they actually won the most medals. If you group all of Europe together.
Hell yeah. I think then whites...
I think if you also exclude Britain from that, it still works out that way.
And then whites on fucking prison continent, also known as fucking North America. Like, we're the real losers, dude. We are the losers this week. Like, we have, like, we live on a prison continent, right?
And I think you're talking about Australia for a second. You're talking about the spiritual prison continent.
Yeah, but, like, they fucking, so we live on prison continent, and then we have our spirit, like, we're told that our fucking representation, like, the face of America that we're forced to live in are just a bunch of, like, giant-nosed suitcase handle people. You know, like, get the fuck out of here. And get this. And get, also, we're mad about Afghanistan. Yeah. Like, we're totally fine with, like, the idea of, like, these fucking mental health, you know, nervous breakdown groids having, like, a real rough time doing fucking gymnastics, right? Like, it's basically just, like, swinging from trees and, like, on vines and shit, but on the ground. They're having a rough time doing that. But they're mad about Afghanistan. Like, give me a fucking break, dude. Be more angry about the Olympics than Afghanistan. Like, fuck Afghanistan. And we should never have been there in the first place.
The real take on all this to me is, this kind of goes off of something I talked about a couple of weeks ago, because, and I understand people might disagree with me on this. I just saw a lot of significance in this. I said that we had reached a turning point a few weeks ago when Biden said that, you know, was taunting America, like, what are you going to do? Americans, what are you going to do? We have, you know, we have tanks and nuclear weapons. And that's a talking point that the chattering classes have always had. But that's, you're not, as a leader, supposed to ever, you know, say that or threaten your own people. That's, like, one of the unspoken rules of being a leader. Like, you might, like, that might, you know, you think that, but you never actually say that. And that's, to me, like, the moment that America on the global stage lost its legitimacy. And now there's this kind of, everybody's looking at each other like, well, okay, what do we do now? Like, America has completely lost the plot. You cannot have the president of the so-called free world talking that way. Well, this this situation compounds that, is that, okay, Biden made that kind of statement and you lost to the Taliban. Your tanks and your nuclear weapons and your F-35s didn't help you there, man.
Yeah.
Well, he tucked his tail and ran. We didn't really lose.
But it's, like I said, like it just compounds the whole fact that the United States is in a legitimacy crisis. It is in a full-on legitimacy crisis. But it's a weird situation where, because America's kind of too big to fail right now. So nobody's going to no one's going to just let the country completely 100% fall apart. It's just it's too connected into everything. It's too big. But it's a situation now where people are going to be talking about, like, okay, like this does not have long-term solvency. This isn't just just isn't going to work.
And now that the beginning stages of this have happened, I mean, you have the census stuff that I think you're going to talk about a little bit later. With all this stuff happening, now is the time, like, oh, it's all crumbling around us, so now we have to tell you, like, hey, just in case you think about, like, rising up because, like, shit's falling down around you, we have nukes and tanks, my nigga. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, really.
Speaking of shit falling down all around you, God. We were just. I don't really have anything else on Afghanistan. Did you have anything else? Because otherwise, I'm going to segue into what happened in Michigan and in kind of the surrounding areas.
No, I people were pretty upset about it. I'm gonna light switch on this and just go ahead and be happy that people I hate are really sad.
Yeah. I'm not a total Talistan right now, but I mean, it is fun to watch.
You're sitting over there right now, dressed in scarves and a fucking head wrap, I bet. Holding an AK-47 doing this podcast.
for the sake of NJP Exposed, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Reading Alexander Dugan.
Still get my beer. It's funny that you mentioned that, and this was given to me at the last NJ. I know they're going, I'm just being ironic, bro, but this really was given to me as a gag gift at the last NJP thing. Right next to my computer is the Fourth Political Theory by Alexander Dugan.
that's getting clipped. Here we have Borzoi admitting, like, his association with fucking Alexander Dugan, I still have no idea who the fuck that guy is.
But I mean, I have all kinds of books. Like, right underneath that, I have H.P. Lovecraft, the from what he wrote for a magazine called The Conservative. So his articles from that. I have Charles Murat, The Future of the Intelligentsia and for a French Awakening. And then I have a bunch of stuff about I have a bunch of D.H. Lawrence books underneath that.
I got, like, pen holder and something on my desk, you know, an empty cup here from some beverages I was having earlier. But, yeah, your desk sounds way cooler than mine. The desk of a learned hound or something like that. I got my fucking... We won't even go into the other stuff I got here on my desk.
I don't even read most of the books I have. It's like Pokemon, really. It's like, you know, if you ever played Pokemon where you're not going to use any of those Pokemon, like, you're going to use the same six, but you want to have the rest of them just because you're a completionist. That's how I am with books.
Yeah, books are just white nationalist Funko Pops. that's really all they are. Like, they're easier to store.
Lie not detected.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Instead of, like, having shelves in your room and shit and, like, having Funko Pops on your wall and stuff, you just have your books on your coffee table. End tables and shit like that, so... Yeah. What I do is, like, I get a book, I sit down to read it, and I'll read, like, the first 40, 60 pages, and then I'm like, you know, I'm gonna put a bookmark in this and, like, come back later. Like, the last book that I sat down and, like, read in its entirety was, Jack McCracken's book. But before that, I don't know, man. I just started like a
Fashco, Fashco Pops. Nice.
Yeah, so.
We were supposed to do... I was actually supposed to go on... They didn't know about this, but they thought I'd be available, and I actually was available. I was supposed to go on Tedious on Friday, and then we were supposed to do an episode yesterday, actually, of Third Rail, me, Nikkei, and Apache. I think you were probably going to jump into that story you had. I can't remember if it was good for the air or not, but it ended up being that some storms rolled through in the Michigan, Northern Ohio area this past week, and I had to deal with a bunch of family members that had flooded basements and no power. So, and then I got home. I had power. I got home. My internet was out.
How does that even work, though? Isn't the fucking
apparently, like, the power had been going out on and off, like, intermittently here, and they had gotten the power back. I was not in my home because I had to go help out family members that week, and apparently, like, the power was going off on and off intermittently here.
Yeah, but how the, like, what did that, like, the Wi-Fi wouldn't come back on because the power kept going on.
I guess the internet company just was having their own separate issues. I don't know. I've always had internet issues, though.
Here I am asking you, like, you're a fucking internet tech and give me, like, a technical answer as to why you didn't have the internet yesterday.
But what,
like,
I found...
This is the Third Rail Inquisition, and I want to know, Borzoi, what steps did you go through to try
to... The Wizquisition here?
Yeah, the Wizquisition...
But we were also supposed to go on Full House as well, and that was the start of all the problems too. So it was just cascading everywhere. But what I found interesting is that it's hard for me to know because I don't, if I catch news, it's generally more local news. I don't follow the national news, but from what I could tell, the power outages that were going on basically in the Midwest really didn't make national news. Now Detroit was hit the hardest by that, and I just found that very interesting. That it's, I mean, there is an aspect of partisan politics to that, because, you know, Biden president and Gretchen Whitmer being the Democratic governor of Michigan, so they tend to downplay that kind of stuff because they save that stuff, that kind of full infrastructure collapses, for when a Republican is in office. But at the same time, I think they're also moving towards a model that they're normalizing people to the idea, like, yeah, a storm could roll through and you might be out of power for 3 days. I know that's always happened. Like, I'm not saying like natural disasters like are a complete indication of collapse, but the response to it is indicative of things falling apart and not getting fixed as the way they used to.
Yeah, and this just kind of priming us for the fact that this is going to be the new normal going forward.
Yeah,
it's like, oh well, this is happening. But you know what, man? I think that you said a key word in there that gives us the reason as to why this is all happening, and a couple of steps perhaps that we could take to get back on the right track. You said Gretchen Whitmer was a Democrat.
I'm sorry, a demon rat. Yes.
Well, I think there's the problem. That's why you guys haven't had power in Michigan. It's because she's a Democrat. This wouldn't have happened if you had a Republican in there.
This is Biden's America. In Biden's America, I don't have power, and and we lose Afghanistan, the 51st state.
Exactly. The 51st state. You'd think it was the 51st state, like, given how much, like, fucking, you'd think that Puerto Rico was just, like, stormed by the Russians or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I'm be honest, dude. I didn't even know about the power being gone until I saw the messages yesterday about you not having power. I was like, oh shit, guess the Michigan guys don't have any power. You have power today? I mean, obviously you're here, but
well, no, I mean, like I said, I wasn't in the area that was hit the hardest by it. I was mostly out of home helping family that, you know, was actually dealing with flooding and just complete blackouts for a while. From what I could tell. I know we lost power for a while, and then it was kind of back on. I don't know. I have not spent much time home in the last, 72 or 96 hours. So it's just been a long week for me.
Sounds like it, man. Yeah. I've never had to deal with any, like, rescue efforts. Not saying you were, like, rescuing people, but I you get what I'm saying. Like, moving. Yeah.
Yeah, we ended up just kind of going to the one day, like, we had that we had to go do stuff. We ended up just going to an art museum instead, which was really nice.
Yeah, so, like, power's out in Michigan, and Borzois at the art museum.
Well, we went back home to Toledo, and just decided, we hadn't been to the art museum there before, so we decided, like, well, why not? Let's go check it out.
Yeah, imagine that. Like, things get so bad in the state that you have to go to fucking Ohio.
I mean, that's where I live, Larry. I moved across the border. Like, I go back and forth between Michigan and Ohio all the time. But I fucking live in Toledo. I don't know what you want from me.
I didn't know that. So, my bad. Some of you are like making jokes.
I mean, like, it's right on the border of it's right on the border of Michigan, so it's like I it's very porous. We tend to go back and forth quite a bit, but
yeah, shit, man, gotta scale the wall from Michigan into Ohio.
Yeah, I slip through that bollard fence every other day.
Got to keep the fucking Ohioans out. Yeah, it would definitely be the other. Well, I don't know. Never mind. That was stupid. But what was that? I was going to say something really fucking dumb there. What was one of the topics you had this evening? The fucking.
You want to get into the more
the rage porn?
I think we might as well push this one right to the top because, and this is I don't know. Like, I'm going to say, you guy, you're probably listening to this, and I'm going to guess based off the email you gave me. That's probably your actual name, so you know who you are, person who sent me this article. Thank you very much for this. This was, I guess he found out we were doing a show tonight, and he rushed to his computer to send me this article, and I'm glad he did. I have not read it yet, but the title alone and the source makes me definitely want to read this. This is from Commentary, which, if you're familiar with the, I can't remember if it was the Crystals or the Potterites or both of them. That Commentary is the old Jewish neoconservative magazine, basically. This article is called "No Jews Aren't White" by Leo Leibowitz, and according to my source here, he's also the editor of Tablet Mag. So I think we're in for a doozy. This is from. And this is from their July-August 2021 issue in Commentary under their Judaism category.
Dude, let me just tell you before you start reading this, the first paragraph, you're going to be like, what the fuck? Like, of course.
We are our own thing, and whatever privilege we possess is conditional. Can you hear her in the background, by the way? I just want to make sure she's not making too much noise.
Hey, I got work to do.
Okay.
I got diapers on.
Okay. Many years ago, I moved from my native Israel to New York, and because I had no cash and no clue, I spent my days helping out at a friend's warehouse store. Not really being the handy type, I cared less about the power tools on display and the customers who craved them, and more about a certain young woman working the cash register. This provoked the ire of a fellow worker who felt slighted that this foreigner should prance into his turf and so brazenly attempt to mate with the females. And so one day in the break room, the gentleman decided to mark his territory. To understand...
So right off the bat...
Go ahead. Yeah. I might as well get ready for you to get in with the commentary here.
Well, yeah, I mean, commentary on commentary. So right off the bat, you have a Jew gets a job. He's like, you know, little me, not, it's like he says, you know, not having a clue. I actually spent my days at work. Can you believe that? Like, what the But then he goes on to say, he's like, yeah, I spent my days at work, not because I cared about the people I was supposed to be taking care of, but because I wanted to fuck the cashier behind the register. It's like, oh, my gosh. Unbelievable.
All right, there we go, right there. To understand fully what happened next, you should know that he was black. With a spring in his step, my rival got very close and stared at me menacingly. I looked at him dumbfounded for a few long moments, at a loss as to what was supposed to happen next. I'd been in fights before, and I knew that when someone was jonesing to start one, he usually pushed or shoved or threw a punch or did something to let the other fellow know the game was afoot. My rival, however, was just standing there, glaring at me as I did at him. Confused, I said the first thing that came to my mind. It was this. Is that supposed to scare me?
File that away under shit that never happened.
My voice must have conveyed that I was genuinely curious since I asked it without a touch of bravado or mockery, and something softened in my colleague's face. Well, he said, looking a bit sheepish, yeah. Does it usually work, I asked. Yes, he said. Is it because you're black and you think I'm white and I'm afraid of you? My colleague was smiling now. You know it. Weird, I said, smiling widely, too. And then we both went out for pizza, and my new friend told me about growing up and watching white American kids, including some who were much bigger and stronger than he, cower whenever he approached, convinced that he possessed both the intention and the ability to hurt them somehow and for whatever reason.
Dude, so it goes... poor soy. It goes from this dude trying to remember, as he puts it, mark his territory on the cashier at the thing here. So he goes up and he just, you think a black, he goes up and just does the menacing bit, doesn't just like immediately attack and brutalize this Jew here. And then the Jew like stands up to him, and then like magic happens and they go out for pizza.
Yeah. Vlad Dracul says, I smell sitcom. Yeah. White Jew and black team up and destroy America.
Yeah, this guy that wrote this is probably, his name is probably not even Leo Leibovitz. Yeah, Lyle. Yeah, old Lion Leibovitz here. This is probably not even his name. He probably is like an actual sitcom writer. This sounds like, he's like, oh, imagine that, like a black. He's like, yeah, man, motherfucker. I used to like watch white kids and shit cower when I was bigger, stronger than a motherfucker cower when I walk up to him. That's just made up nonsense. That never happened. Like, just like this meeting with this Jew didn't happen. This is like the Jewish Rod Dreher. I was talking with my friend here.
Like, I was looking into who this guy was. So Leibovitz was born in Israel to Iris and Roni Leibovitz. His father, born into a wealthy family, became known in Israel as the motorcycle bandit who robbed 21 banks and served 8 years in prison during his son's childhood.
Hell yeah. You said that was fucking Roni Baloney Leibovitz.
Yep.
Married to old Iris the Yenta.
Yeah, so I was just seeing if he had a different name. You know, he's Lyle Leibovitz, born in 1976 in Tel Aviv.
You know, what's going on with all these fucking Jews and their gay names? Shlomo, Shlomi, Leol, fucking abracadabra, this and that. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck? Where do these come from? Like, how do they make these up?
Oh, good God. All right, let's continue. This was my introduction to the Bad Kabuki Theater of contemporary American race relations, in which real issues remain obscured stage right and left, while heavily panted grotesqueries jump around and shout eager for attention. Which is not to say that systemic racism isn't real, or that you don't stand a much better chance of being senselessly harassed by the police if you're black, or that centuries of discrimination haven't taken their toll, or that representation in the media doesn't matter, or that healthcare disparities aren't frequently predicated on race and gender, or that any of the other arguments hurled at you as soon as the conversation turns to race aren't valid. But if you'd like to understand everything that's so inherently nuts about the contemporary American conversation about race, it only takes this one three-word sentence. Jews are white.
Yep, that's it. I think that I hit the nail right on the head.
Okay, you heard.
I mean, would you agree with that? That would be like a big one. Speaking on race relations, Jews are white, because I mean that's a fucking lie, and it's a lie that keeps a lot of people like in the dark about things that they should be in the light about.
Yeah.
But I mean, and then like, oh, the truth about blacks. But I think people know the truth about blacks. They just, they're lied to by people who think are like them. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Do you agree with that? You think that would be the most?
Do I think be the most what? I'm sorry. I was just trying to make sure.
Well, like, him saying that was like the one, like when you're talking about race relations and stuff, like it could be summed up in like three words. Like the one thing that sticks out most is like Jews.
No, he says like the most inherently nuts thing about the contemporary conversation about race. He's like, he's saying this incredulously. He's like, Jews are white. Like,
well,
he's saying that in an incredulous way, and that's the most he thinks that's the most, like, when it comes to race relations in the United States, the most insane thing is that Jews are white.
I mean, I don't know. That is pretty insane.
That's what he's. But no, we are doing the hand. We are doing the handshake meme right now with Lyle Leibowitz here, of like Jews aren't white.
It's like, amen, brother. You know, been saying that for years.
You heard endless variations on this sentiment during Israel's recent skirmish of Hamas as a parade of lawmakers, intellectuals, and entertainers took to social media to denounce the world's sole Jewish state of perpetrating apartheid or of murdering black and brown bodies. You hear it from radical Jewish advocates who trill that Jews are white passing and therefore functionally white, which means they should take their place among the world's most privileged no matter what they've happened to their families between, say, 1939 and 1945. You hear it in colleges where you can pay the equivalent of the median American salary just to attend courses with titles like Jews and Racial Privilege. You hear it wherever our bien pensant congregate to show one another their virtues and pledge allegiance to their new radical religion. How to make sense of this?
Dude. What? It always goes back to the fucking Holocaust.
Yep.
And then, have you ever heard of a college course called Jews and Racial Privilege?
Well, no.
This is all just a lie. This is like,
I was trying to think of something funny, and I couldn't think of anything. If you were a completist or pedant, you could simply insist that viewing the world and its inhabitants through the lens of race is a creepy 19th century affectation that excited mainly the most feeble-minded of Germans and led to a good bit of savagery. Like, there's nothing wrong with saying it in a 19th century way. Like, I still say Negro and the Jew. I think that, like, you got to do the, mix up the classics with the newfangled racial slurs.
Yeah, exactly.
You can marshal Martin Luther King Jr. to your defense and say that you take the line about content of character over color of skin seriously. That kind of talk is earnest, but it won't get you very far with those for whom race alone, and not say poverty or lack of community or debilitating exposure to mind-rotting digital platforms, shapes every thread of the human experience. Next, you can try and argue that the category itself, white, is ridiculous. Go tell Giuseppe, for example, that his granddaughter is now considered a member of the rarefied white elite, even though he and his fellow immigrants were pelted with racial insults, discriminated against, and murdered. We got Columbus Day, for example, after 11 Italian-Americans were lynched in 1892, leading President Harrison to instate a day-long celebration he thought would never become a tradition. I'm sure that they instated Columbus Day because of that, not because that was 400 years since Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Yeah, holy shit. Oh my goodness. And what the, and like also, 11 Italian Americans lynched in 1892, like,
all right, I gotta see what this is all about now. I don't mean to bring it up. Like, I gotta see the. Oh, here we go. The March 14, 1891 New Orleans lynchings. They were lynched by a mob for their alleged role in the murder of city police chief David Hennessy.
But, like, oh, so you mean criminals had justice visited upon them? Ah, in 1892. And they're trying to, and this Jew wants to tell you that that's why we got Columbus Day, which is now, like, basically what, like, Genocide Day, one of the genocide days, right?
Oh, okay, so basically this was some, there was some mob shit going on, okay, and people, basically the people in New Orleans had enough.
Yeah, and, you know, that's why we got Columbus Day.
Yeah, exactly, that's
the fucking nerve of this guy, dude. My gosh. So, and then, dude, the rest of this, though, is funny. Yeah. I will finish the rest of this. Or inform Patty. So, that while back in his day, the Irish were talked about, to quote one sickening periodic refrain, as Negroes turned inside out, his grandson may now rest assured on the top of the racial grievance food chain. I don't, you know, the extent of that, I mean, what... I don't know, man. Is that, like, was that even, like, super widespread? It's like, oh, God, one time fucking hundreds of years ago this happened. But
there's always been issues with the Irish in this country, but that's that has nothing to do with them supposedly not being white.
And this is coming from the chief, like the chief guy of all the issues, like coming from the Jew, who is like the like the starting point of so many issues in America. So many fucking problems lead back to him, and he wants to tell you about how, like, it's just unbelievable.
And yet, even these objections, solemn as they may be, don't begin to capture the weight of the argument that Jews are somehow white. Take a moment to acquaint yourself, even in passing, with our stiff-necked people, and it's the following observation that is likely to register very near the top. We stand out precisely because we don't fit in. Is Judaism a religion? Sure. Are Jews a nation? Yes. Do we share genetic traits? Offer us dairy and find out. Do we come in all shapes, sizes, and skin colors? Amen Salah. This is why I, a ninth generation Israeli.
Oh my gosh, dude. Ninth generation.
I need to stand up for a second, Larry. I'm rarely ever this thunderstruck. Oh my god.
Well, I mean, a generation Borzoi is what? 20 years about?
Yeah, thereabouts.
180 years his family's been in Israel.
Yeah.
Oh my god, the fucking nerve. Ninth generation fucking Israeli, 14th generation Holocaust survivor. Holy fucking shit.
This is why I, a ninth generation Israeli whose ancestors arrived in Jerusalem from the backwaters of the Austrian Empire, can amble into the Slat El Azama Synagogue in Marrakesh or the Beth Yakov Synagogue in Geneva or the Ohel Lia Synagogue in Hong Kong. Why do all these places have synagogues? Like, I know the answer to that. I'm being rhetorical, but do people ever stop and just like think about that? Like, God, that's really weird.
Yeah, all the time, man. Yeah, there's one like close by to where I live, and it's like, what the fuck is this? Why is this here? I didn't even know the Jews lived here, dog.
The chat's as thunderstruck as I am. This Eyes of the Wolf 101 just sums up, this hurts.
Yeah, nine generations since 1948. Yeah, but these are in all these places because they're like these are all like points in the crime web.
This is why I, a 99th generation Israeli, can go into all these different synagogues, look around, and see faces that vary wildly, and yet rest assured that when services start, we will all recite in more or less the exact same fashion the ancient words that Jews have spoken in daily prayer for a millennia. If this kind of image, black Jews and white Jews, European Jews and African Jews, educated wealthy Jews and barely literate poor Jews, all understanding one another perfectly because they belong to the same strange family, strikes you as too flimsy, consider the criteria put forth by Jose Martinez Cobo, an anthropologist engaged by the United Nations to serve as special rapporteur on discrimination against indigenous populations as to what makes a people indigenous. To fit the bill, he argued, peoples and nations should display one or more of the following: occupation of ancestral lands, common ancestry, a shared culture or religion, and a shared language. By any and all metrics at our disposal, archaeology, history, theology, even DNA tests, Jews, if anything, are the indigenous people of the land of Israel, from which they might have been exiled now and then, but to which they always return. Is there anybody else that falls under that criteria that we're allowed to talk about?
Sounds a lot like, like Europe should... Like Europe, Europeans and stuff, we had all that stuff fits us. We're indigenous there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Somehow I feel like there's an exception there for us. And we're not counted for that.
Yeah. And then this is also like theology. By all metrics at our disposal, theology, like one fuck. I don't know. That's rare. I feel like that's not something you usually see in like an article where they're trying to like put for like a theological reason. It's like, give me a fucking break. You don't accept that that from anybody else. Only like kikes can make like theology. Only they can make these theology references and shit like that. But like if you know, I you know what I mean.
Yeah.
DNA test, like DNA tests. If anything, Jews, indigenous people of the land of Israel, say, get the fuck out of here.
Still, to the zealots who shout that Jews are white, all that matters is the following steely argument that for the last few decades, American Jews have benefited from the rewards that come with being among our society's most educated and best compensated few. This is irrefutably true. About 4 in 10 Jews live in households making more than $100,000 per year, more than any other religious group in America, an astonishing statistic when you consider that we constitute less than 2% of the population. And yet this materialistic art... I know. It's infuriating. Okay, I'm not gonna be able to make jokes. I'm gonna just have to steal them from the chat because I'm paralyzed of rage right now. And yet this materialistic argument is rendered futile not only by the fact that it assumes the trappings of privilege have been bestowed on all Jews. They have not. Anywhere between 16% and 20% of Jewish American households, according to a recent survey by the Harry and Jeanette Weinberg Foundation, earn less than $30,000 a year. The
Dude,
argument,
listen, like, oh my gosh, they're like, oh, the idea that the trappings of privilege have been bestowed on all Jews, they haven't. They're like 16. Between 16% and 20%, so like 16-17% of Jews earn less than $30,000 a year.
And I want to see how they calculate that. Is that just the reported income for that year?
And are you including fucking 16-year-olds who can just like get a job doing like what, like some menial labor or something, like high school job or something? You know what I mean? Like, are you including that too in this? So you can get like, is that the 16?
Oh, that's
like
a good point. Percentage? Yeah, that's a good point right there.
Yeah, what percentage of this is like high school students and fucking people that are in college?
Yeah, high school students that are reported living in their parents' like second house.
Yeah, fucking ridiculous, dude. And like 16% and 20%, it's like, what's the percentage of like whites that are like living in the same thing? You know what I mean? Even whites that just are out of high school, I guarantee you, it's fucking more than 16% and 20%.
I'll have to send this to the Jew I know that his job is to help Jews hide all their money and see if he howls with laughter if I show him this. The argument of particular privilege is especially spurious because it ignores the unique nature of anti-Jewish bigotry, a highly resistant viral strain that feeds precisely on the difficult truth that Jews don't really fit comfortably into any of the categories that the grand ideologies of the age have created to make sense of the glorious mess of human diversity. Jews are just Jews, a difficult realization that has driven haters to distraction throughout the generations. It's why we alone have been singled out for a specific kind of steady stream of suspicion and persecution throughout history, even here in America. It's a torrent that hasn't grown any weaker, no matter how cheerful we wish to be. In 2019, for example, nearly two-thirds of all religious-based hate crimes in America targeted Jews, a 14% increase from the previous year and rising. Tragically or comically, depending on your point of view, when members of our smart set are asked to address the surge, they find it truly and utterly baffling. For a particularly blunt and amusing example of this genre, see a recent story published by Vox, which scratched its headline while admitting that violent anti-Semitism spiked in America during the Israel-Hamas war, and we don't know why. This bafflement, as the writer Elad Lapidot noted in Tablet, is predicated precisely on our intellectuals' inability to come to terms with the simple idea that Jews are a people apart. If you define, as the liberal ethos does, all forms of bigotry as rooted in the sin of essentialism, saying that all blacks, for example, possess a certain quality, or that all Latinos exhibit certain behaviors, you hit a brick wall when dealing with Jews. Ours, alas, is not the spirit of the Enlightenment. We are not ones for radical individuality or social contracts among free and unfettered souls who care neither a feather nor a fig for family and tribe. Ours is the communal ethos of the Hebrew Bible. It's the story of us, not of me. And it's possible and coherent precisely because it allows, encourages, mandates us to display and cultivate shared traits. Some Jews may have... Go ahead.
Like he's just saying, like, for me, not for thee.
Yep. Yeah. You know what I mean? He just came out and said it.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, you know, we're gonna sit here and like push all this radical individuality on you, but that's not how we operate. He's like coming out and saying, like, we are involved in a conspiracy. Like, we're not ones for radical individuality or social, like, you know what I mean? Who in a lot of cases, like, where's this radical individuality coming from? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Some Jews may have more melanin in their skin or fewer dollars in their bank accounts. Some may dress in black and some drape themselves in the colors of the rainbow, but all belong to an extended family that stayed a family because it insisted on the display of collective behaviors. Essentialist, you betcha. He's also just coming out saying, like, oh, like, there's no difference. Like, because sometimes you'll see them try to do, like, oh, those are left-wing Jews, and, like, no, you can, like, we have to ally with right-wing Jews. He's just coming out saying, no, like, Jews are all part of the same family. It doesn't matter if they're gay or black. Or like Hasidic or baby touchers or what have you.
Yeah.
We're all Jews. We're all in this together.
Yeah, dude, it gets crazy. It goes fucking individualism for thee, not for me. Like, for thee, not for me. And then the next one, what you just said, dude, fucking, we're an extended family. Left or right doesn't fucking matter. It's all the same bullshit. Essentialist, you betcha. Just like, I fucking, like, I don't know what this guy looks like, but I can just, like, picture some, like,
oh, I'll send, I saw a picture of it. I saw a picture of him. I'll send you. It was a yeah, the son of a motorcycle bank robber.
Yeah, Roni Baloney.
Actually, I got two good pictures here. Three. I'll post all these for you right here, for you later, and for everybody, for people who are playing at home on audio, go ahead and do Google or search or Bing or DuckDuckGo or whatever. Lyle Leibowitz, and you can play along with Larry's live reactions right here. There you go, buddy. There's one.
He looks like Ethan Klein with a wider chin.
Here's a good one right here. Like, I don't know why he allowed this photo to pass muster.
The eyes. Oh, the giant teeth.
Yep. That's Lyle Leibowitz right there.
Lyle.
Yeah, no, I know you guys can't see because I'm just not going to bother with the OBS. Like, I managed to get the show going tonight. Do you really want me to try anything else at this point? Have we not suffered under my tenure as producer enough?
And then you're going to get people that are like, you know, man, I love the show, but it'd be a lot better if you, like, showed the stuff you were talking about. It's like, come on, dude. Like,
have we not suffered enough of my technical difficulties?
Yeah. Just give the guy a fucking break.
Like, even I have thrown in the towel. I admit, I suck at this. There you go.
You know, it's more so, it's like, I found the prep. You can find it, too. I found it. Show some agency and find the prep yourself. Just, you can read along with me. Pause the podcast and come back in a fucking minute when you pull up the article.
Which leaves progressives, poor souls, in a pickle. To admit that there is something unique about Jews that does not conform to the dogmas of intersectionality and white privilege and the other semi-coherent mutterings at the core of their new and monstrous woke religion would be to introduce more doubt and nuance than our secular Savonarolas can stomach. To ease their tensions, to keep their faith alive, they resort to a simple pronouncement that flattens all difference and erases all difficulty. Jews are white. It's not too difficult to understand what moves the non-Jews shouting this rot. The creative genius of Jew hatred has always been its ability to imagine the Jew as the embodiment of whatever it is that polite society finds repulsive. That's why Jews were condemned as both nefarious bankers controlling all the world's money and shifty revolutionaries imperiling all capital, as both sexless creeps and oversexed lechers coming for the women and the girls, as both pathetically powerless and occultly powerful. Like something out of Harry Potter, the Jew takes the shape of whatever the Jew hater fears loves most. And if you decide that there is such a thing as whites and that they are uniquely responsible for all evils perpetrated on the innocent and downtrodden, well, the Jews must not only of them, but nestled comfortably at the top of the white supremacist pyramid.
Yeah, he fucking, so then he goes, like, right here, it's funny, he's like, you know what, they're condemned as both nefarious bankers and then then the sexless creeps and oversexed lechers. It's like, oversexed are the ones that are just, like, doing the raping. And it's like, you can be nefarious bankers controlling all the world's money and shifty revolutionaries imperiling all capital. Like, you can be both of those. I mean, like he said, like, two paragraphs above, you know, some Jews are different. Like, they can be both of those things, but they're still both Jews.
Yep. No, yeah, no, he slips and slides constantly throughout this. But like,
yeah,
so
I interrupted you there, man.
Yeah, no, it's just like he doesn't other than like weird Jews and deal with it, like he doesn't really have a consistent point.
Yeah, and then yeah, exactly. And then he talks about like shape shifting and stuff, making an argument that fucking like Jews are like the Ditto of humanity. You know, Ditto the Pokemon that turns into like whatever he's facing. They're just shapeshifters. They're like the Ditto.
It's the wizard shit again.
And they bring up Harry Potter, like some kind of Harry Potter. The Jew takes shape out of whatever the Jew hater hates and fears the most. I mean, Harry Potter was the Jew in Harry Potter. So like, how convenient for you to bring this up.
Harold Potterwitz.
Yeah, no. I mean, seriously, he was Jewish. He is Jewish in real life, but in like his character in that.
Oh yeah,
movie,
Daniel
like,
Radcliffe is Jewish, isn't he? I always forget that.
Yeah, he's like half, but like,
yeah. Well, right. I mean, like as we've learned, that doesn't really mean anything other than Jew. Things get a bit hairier when it comes to Jews themselves repeating the Jews are white canard, often in the form of a mea culpa. Why do this? Why would any Jew ignore so much evidence and common sense and repeat it? If you're looking to begin and understand this madness, consider the following three misfortunes.
Dude,
first,
the Jews are apologizing. Why do this? Why would any Jew ever apologize for anything? He says it in an apologetic manner. Why would you ever apologize if you're a Jew? It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's crazy.
Vlad Dracul's got a good one because you brought up Pokemon. Ash Kvetchum.
Yeah.
Ash. That's a good one.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it was. Ash Kvetchum. I don't know. The jury's out. You know, we haven't really looked at Pokemon through the lens of a white nationalist yet. I think that we'll have to do this sometime.
I think
maybe Borzoi.
No, Pokemon's Aryan.
Yeah. Oh, you've done this already?
Oh no! Think about this. Like you're taming nature, but you have a like. It's not like the way like these disgusting people. Basically, like maltreat animals. No, it's stated within the Pokemon universe that trainers and Pokemon have a very special relationship with each other. These are people who are in tune with nature, and they've become stewards to the Pokemon world. That's why Pokemon is Aryan.
And then the villain is dealing with the Jew cat Meowth with the fucking coin on his forehead.
The person who voiced Meowth in the dub was a Jewish tranny. That's actually true.
Unbelievable. So yeah, team. I mean, there it is.
I can't remember what his actual name was, but Maddie Blaustein. That was the voice of Meowth.
Shit, is there a pause button on this Pokemon stuff?
This is the pause button on the Pokemon stuff.
Yeah, you cut that in when you're editing. Shh, this is the pause. Right, greetings to the pause button. I don't know, but we could, if you want, man, we could watch all the seasons of Pokemon and then talk about it. Do you want to do that?
No, I don't want to do that.
Well, I thought I'd ask. Could have been cool. Are we ever going to sit down and do all eight of the Harry Potter movies?
No.
No.
All right. You might need to forward this to him. Did anyone reach out to Beer Queer for this show? I need to hear a parody version of the Pokemon theme song about NGOs and refugees.
No, he did a hell of a fucking parody the other day.
Oh my god, I gotta. Let me play it right now. Sorry, I know we got to finish this article, but now I have to actually play this.
It's fucking great.
I was rolling on the floor when I heard this.
They say
he can actually
sing. A secret slur.
Wait, what was that?
He can actually sing.
Okay, I'm going to play this now.
They say that there's a secret slur that starts with N and it ends with er, but you never got banned from Twitter, did you? Well, it goes like this, the N, the I, the double G, the E, oh my, the hardest R completes the N-word tower. Say the N-word. Say the N-word. Say the N-word. Say the N-word.
You know, I'll have you know that whenever I heard that the first time, I was listening, like, I heard that song playing in my mind while, like, visualizing scenes from the movie Shrek. So I thought that you might have had the same thing, because that song's in Shrek.
Yep, that's the version they use in Shrek is the John Cale version.
I thought you were going to say the beer queer version.
Well, in all subsequent edits of the movie, yes.
Yeah, they should have. What the hell was going on in that part of the movie when that was playing? It was the part where
they're walking like through the woods, and so they got like the thing what would be a camera panned up, and basically you got kind of, it's just kind of like a nice little nature scene.
Oh, and is it like him being all bummed out about that woman?
I can't remember exactly.
This is the pause button, dude. We're doing Shrek and Pokemon.
Yeah, a lot of people think that the version in Shrek is the Jeff Buckley version, but that's actually John Cale from Velvet Underground. Anyways.
Well, I didn't even know who sang the other version. I don't. Jeff Buckley.
The song's originally a Leonard Cohen song.
Oh, okay.
But the version that a lot of people really like is the Jeff Buckley version. But the version that's in the Shrek film is the John Cale version. People get the John Cale and Jeff Buckley version mixed up a lot.
John Superfood Cale.
Oh, so sorry. So, consider the following three misfortunes. First, those Jews who accept the mantle of whiteness have quite literally lost track of time and space. Rather than humbly admit that the arc of history is long and often bends towards anti-Semitism, as is the clear pattern that emerges, hell yeah, that as is the clear pattern that emerges when you study any period of history in any corner of planet Earth, it just keeps happening. This is just destined to be that way.
And we don't know why, Borzoi, we never did anything. Holy fucking shit.
They conclude quietly that because they themselves have experienced no animosity in Silver Spring or Westchester or Highland Park, that animosity has never really existed. To them, human history began in 1993 between the swearing in of Clinton and Bjork's first LP. Oh, fuck you. He's playing off of a Philip Larkin poem where that was it. Basically goes that what is it? It's Anna Mirabil. It's a poem that called Annus. I think it's Annus Mirabilis by. Let me see here. It's the Larkin poem. Is it that one? Yeah, sexual. Yeah, that's right. So he's doing a play off of this poem. Sexual intercourse began in 1963, which is rather late for me, between the end of the Chatterley Band and the Beatles' first LP.
Oh, what a fucking asshole!
Yeah. You're not a good writer. Shut the fuck up, dude.
I would have flown like right over my head. I never read.
Well, I'm as we have discussed before, years ago, Larry. I am a lit cell. So,
well, I mean, there you go.
A lit cell art fag. So it's unfortunately I gotta flex this knowledge that literally nobody asked me to do.
And to also put upon what I said, to add on to what I said earlier about never being able to know if anything is true, you're also an author. So which do I believe?
It's like that. it's like that. Is it which movie is it from? Is it Labyrinth where they have the classic puzzle of like one person? There's one, like one guard always tells the truth and one guard always tells lies, and you have to figure out which one it is.
Yeah.
One podcaster writes books, the other one's not able to read books. That's how you figure out the truth and lies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you write and read.
No, but I'm saying the liar guard would be the one who writes books, and the truth-telling guard was the one who would not read books.
Exactly, because it's not... He's so simple, he's not in his nature to lie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it would be in his nature to lie. Everybody lies.
Borzoi Ismaila, forgive him, a gay nerd. Yeah, I can't
Someone
really argue.
Says that here, this is great. Borzoi, more like Snorzoi.
No, my favorite part about that is he wrote like six individual Z's and then decided that he needed to have three more Z's in a separate line after that. Like he didn't get his point across the first time.
No. Oh, man. If Borzoi was a Pokemon, he'd be Borzlax. Oh, too bad. Flew right over your head.
No, I got it.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. Back to Pokemon.
Back to Pokemon. The stance is perfectly aligned with a culture and a politics that praise radical individualism and personal experience over anything else. Not that personally experiencing anti-Semitism, as nearly two-thirds of Americans told pollsters they had this year, would change the picture much, just as black intellectuals who go against the simplistic narrative of race as a monolith are discounted and hounded for failing to be black in the correct and approved manner, so are Jews who share their plight dismissed as being whiners who fail to see the bigger picture of oppression and their shameful place in it. The Jews are white Jews, then acquiesce and assure themselves that nothing bad will happen here because, well, nothing bad has happened here yet to them.
I might be retarded here, but this doesn't make any sense. Not that personally experiencing anti-Semitism is nearly two-thirds of Americans told pollsters they had this year. Two-thirds of Americans experienced anti-Semitism this year? Two-thirds of Americans aren't Jews.
I don't know what he's trying to say with that exactly. Did he mean to say American Jews? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I just confused the shit out of me. Yeah, my bad. I interrupted you again.
Yep. A modicum of immersion in Jewish life would save these Jews from the maws of their own obliviousness, but herein lies their second misfortune. Religion to them has become not the communal pursuit of study and practice as it had been for Jews since at least Moses, but one more lifestyle decision among many. For the most part, the modern progressive Jew is Jewish the same way she's vegan, say, or a socialist, or a fan of matcha lattes. Like nearly a third of American adults, she likely defines herself as spiritual but not religious, ignoring the fact that religion emerged in precisely the same way across cultures and continents, precisely because humans realized that spiritual stirrings alone were meaningless unless tethered to the ground by rituals that had to be performed together with other people. The young secular Jews who identify as white have none of that. As they are not likely to belong to a synagogue or a faith community, they practice their Judaism as they do their aversion to gluten, privately and sporadically as the mood suits them. It's much easier than accepting the yoke of obligations from holding space with other Jews you may not like to performing practices like keeping kosher you may not fully understand, but it also offers far less protection against being swallowed by the tide of a hostile culture. Which brings us to misfortune number three. Being all too human, progressive Jews are eager to belong to something, and because their own parents spent decades and hundreds of thousands of dollars telling them that the greatest good is to be found in the quad of an Ivy League school or the sparkling boardroom of a Fortune 100 company or any of the other temples of the all-American meritocracy, they are happy to pay any price to fit in among the swells. If you grew up in a household where Shabbat candles were rarely, if ever, lit and no one bothered reading a page of Talmud, but where SAT scores were obsessed over and Penn and Princeton stickers, coffee mugs, and sweatshirts ordered as soon as those thick admission envelopes arrived in the mail, you would understandably pay any price to stay in the good graces of the priestly class that maintains these hallowed institutions. So if the priests demand that you identify as white and say a little prayer of repentance for your sins, well, isn't that a small price to pay for the American dream? He's just straight up lying now about this kind of stuff. That,
yeah.
It's just, we're at the last paragraph. I apologize for this long. I know we got, this article really was belabored. That nothing good ever came to the Jews from groveling, that we survived, indeed thrived, precisely because we refused to compromise our beliefs, is lost on these lost souls. In their errorless world, nothing is true and nothing is permitted except for parroting the articles of faith passed down by those who hold power, which he's arguing aren't Jews that hold power. Oh, I see. And this makes sense because he's a tablet guy, so he basically makes the argument that no, Jews aren't actually in power; they're just conforming to the woke elite. Thankfully, as some Jews continue to torment themselves by trying to fit in familiar that will never accept them for who they are, most young Jews are traveling in the exact opposite direction. According to the latest Pew survey released earlier this year, only 3% of Jews 65 and older define themselves as observant, while among adults under 30, the number skyrockets to 17%. This means that many among the coming generation of American Jews have no use for obscene formulations like Jews are white. They have only one identity marker, the only one they ever had, the only one that matters. Jews are Jews.
That's pretty enraging, man.
Yep.
As I'm sure it's the exact opposite for American whites.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
I don't know what you say after all that.
I have no idea. Talked about it for almost an hour though.
This Pokemon.
Well, yeah, I mean that was just a pleasurable conversation. That was like the sugar cube that we had to enjoy this with.
Yep.
But didn't you have fucking to like hop right off of this, didn't you have some like sense like religious census stuff?
Yeah, I could do that. I wasn't sure if you wanted to do that or the because you sent me a thing. What was this? Oh, it was the counties being. Yeah, that didn't seem like it was a long thing. Did you want to talk about that quickly? That kind of actually just dovetails as well into the religion census data.
It was basically there was I don't have it pulled up right here in front of me, but it was essentially just saying that like there's 400 white counties now.
Yeah, this is from Axios. More than 400 U.S. counties are now minority white.
I see this. Yeah, white non-Hispanic Americans now account for less than 6 in 10 people in the U.S., a precipitous drop over the past decade than experts expected. A more precipitous drop, sorry. And they're no longer the racial ethnic majority in 13% of the U.S. counties. The big picture. Then they are like, oh my good, you know, Borsley, can you imagine this? That America's identity is shifting with this population? But white non-Hispanic Americans are about 58% of the U.S. population, according to data from the 2020 census released on Thursday. That's lower than the estimates of 60%, and it compares with about 64% in 2010. And in 2010, there were 340 counties where they weren't the majority, right? And now it's 400 is where they're not the ethnic majority.
Yeah.
So... And then down here it goes, the intrigue. Non-whiteness and diversity are actually two different measures. The census has also developed a way to calculate diversity based on how likely it is that two people, chosen at random, within a boundary, will be of different races or ethnicities. The least diverse state, by this measure, is Maine at 19%. The most diverse state is Hawaii. At 76%. So that's
Hawaii state that's so diverse they have in schools kill Howley Day.
Do they really?
Yeah. No, it's they try to deny that it's a real thing, but it's if you're white growing up in Hawaii, you know about kill Howley Day. It's a real thing. It's they try very, very hard to downplay it. They try very hard to deny it's a thing. But for people who may not know, Hawley is what they call, it's a racial slur for white people in Hawaii, even though it's supposed to be technically a word that the native Hawaiians use against, any non-Hawaiian. They don't use it against the Japanese who are Asians are a plurality in Hawaii. That's actually the largest I don't know if it's technically just the Japanese, but if you lump all basically the East Asians together, they're either the plurality or the outright majority in Hawaii, whites in Hawaii are a very small minority, and they actually have, you know, they call it, the word Hali is reserved for them, basically.
Shit. I did not know that.
Yeah,
Hawaii's I forget about Hawaii a lot.
Hawaii's just a worthless fucking state. It's just a place to dump basically meth addicts and American warships.
So it's like America's Australia. Hawaii is to America what Australia was to England.
Fuck Hawaii. I just hate Hawaii. Fuck that state.
Yeah, some fucking bunch of dumbass rocks out in the middle of the ocean. Fuck that thing. Bunch of boats and shit. Pearl Harbor, more like Gay Harbor, right? So you said this dovetails right into what you were talking about. Yeah, you have like actual prep.
I have a couple of like scattered thoughts on this. Just because, like, I saw this tweet. I don't think you saw, unless you were looking at my Telegram earlier this weekend, you might have actually missed this one, Larry. But there's this YouTuber who, I think he's called by Alternate History Hub. Have you ever heard of him?
Never.
He basically does these videos that posit, like, here's an alternate history scenario and how it might play out type thing. I've watched a few. I used to watch a couple of his videos just because the algorithm would recommend it for me. I was like, okay, that was, I guess, interesting. I wonder what else is going on. That kind of thing where it's like, I never thought too much about it. But this was on August 13th. He tweeted out, "Yes, U.S. media, we get it. The white population in the U.S. is lower than it was. Stop shoving it in the trending tab." Then after that, he replied, "We get more Catholics, so I still win." Then he replied to that, "Yeah, that's right. I want Hispanics to flood the country. I want my theological empire, you fucks." And then he replied to that, "I see you retards quoting me as soy jacks. Well, who fucking cares when we're talking about Christ, you dumb fucks?"
Wow. I mean, I think I actually... is this something... Were you talking about the Santa Muerte thing?
Yes,
is that the post? Yeah,
because I always laugh. It cracks me up every time. Like somehow we've done this full circle thing where like it used to be Republicans made the talking point that Hispanics are natural conservatives. That's why we should want more of them, and people went through a populist thing and looped and became alt Republicans and just looped right back to, well, I want more Hispanics because they made it worse. So I want more Hispanics because I think I'm going to get a theological, a theocratic, integralist Catholic, you know, Hispano Catholic state out of this. It's like, what makes you think that's going to happen here if it didn't happen down south?
Yeah, it's not gonna fucking happen here. But, and you would think that people like there's no fucking way that these people like actually believe the things that they're saying. Like, there's no way the guy actually believes that.
I don't know. I think people gaslight themselves into thinking that stuff. Well, I often use this example. So, Larry, do you know what the population of Mexico is?
No idea.
Okay, it is 127 million, according to, if I just plug that into Google. So 127 million. Now, listen to this about Santa Muerte. And I think most people know what Santa Muerte is, but I'm going to read the...
Does that translate to Saint Death?
Yes. So I'm going to read...
Like,
I'm going to.
Okay,
so, like, okay, I'm just going to read this Wikipedia here. Nuestra Señora de la Santa Muerte. What?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but can I queue up Don't Fear the Reaper quick?
It's probably going to get taken down, but if you can find like a shitty meaty version of it, maybe.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Anyway.
Often shortened to Santa Muerte is a cult image female deity and folk saint in Mexican neo-paganism and folk Catholicism. A personification of death, she's associated with healing, protection, and safe delivery to the afterlife by her devotees. Despite condemnation by leaders of the Catholic Church and more recently evangelical movements, her following has become increasingly prominent since the turn of the 21st century. By the way, if you don't know what like the Santa Muerte stuff looks like, it is a skeleton wearing basically the like traditional traditional kind of clothing that's saved for like a saint or for Mother Mary that you often see in Catholic iconography, but they put a skeleton in instead of a person. So the cult of Santa Muerta began in Mexico sometime in the mid-20th century and was clandestine until the 1990s. Most prayers and other rites have been traditionally performed privately at home. Since the beginning of the 21st century, worship has become more public, especially in Mexico City after a believer called Enriqueta Romero initiated her famous Mexico City shrine in 2001. The number of believers in Santa Muerta has grown over the past 10 to 20 years to an estimated 10 to 20 million followers in Mexico, the United States, and parts of Central America. Now, that's they're spreading that across that whole area, but 10 to 20 million followers in Mexico. Like, if you just average that out and assume most and decide that that's in Mexico, that's 10% of the states of the country's population that practices that. Now, so it's probably anywhere between 5 to 15%. I like to just, I'll just cut and, go right to the middle and just assume 10%. About 10% has some familiarity with the practice of Santa Muerta. And these are the people that are coming into the United States.
But we're going to have a theological... Unbelievable. Yeah, we're going to have... What did you say? A theological fucking...
Empire,
yeah. Theological empire. Yeah, with Santa Muerta? Theological empire? Won't be Catholic, buddy.
This guy's making... Fun. Did you just say meaty and meant... Meaty? M-I-D-I, I call that meaty. That's how I pronounce it.
What, meaty?
Yeah, meaty. Meaty. You know, the really shitty audio format back when, we had web pages back in the 1990s, you couldn't render anything else, so you had, the really shitty digital-sounding... the computer-sounding version of a pop song.
Bro, I was, playing Game Boy Color in the 90s. I didn't have a computer. I don't even know what you're talking about. So, meaty, Migi from Parasite, the Maxim. But I thought meaty. I don't even... Where did this come... I don't know, man.
Let's see here. Let's see if I just gave my... By downloading this. Want to see if this works at all.
Oh, you're going to play one of these meaty things?
Yeah.
The meat file?
Yeah. It's not letting me. Oh, well. Probably for the best.
You don't want to figure out what's wrong with it? Could be interesting.
This dude says GIF. All right. Sorry. So... First of all, you have this problem that, the people who are coming to this country, even if they are nominally Catholic, it's they're probably bringing some other practices that are probably not in line with the Catholic Church. Second of all, the Hispanic world's actually Protestantizing and going evangelical really quickly. I have this article. I don't know if I'll read it, but the fastest growing group of American evangelicals, a new generation of Latino Protestants is poised to transform our religious and political landscapes. I'm not going to read this. I'm not that interested in it. But it's basically about how quickly Latinos are becoming, or Hispanic. I'm sorry, Stricker. I don't know what the term is. Okay, the mestizos. We'll just say mestizos. How quickly mestizos are becoming Protestant evangelicals. And it's just something I think about a lot because I was talking about this with the guys, and this is what the point I was trying to get to with all this. Because I was talking about this with Nikkei and Apache last night. And alternate history YouTuber guy, he's exactly the type of person I just really dislike. Because it's a big fucking LARP and cope of that, to think that way. And two, it's always embedded in there this deep antagonism and sometimes veering even on hatred sometimes of the white Protestants of the United States. And I've always been really disgusted by that. And it's something that I notice a lot because you would think, Larry, being in this thing, that a lot of the white guys that are really religious, you would think based off of the way that they talk that America's a majority Catholic country, right?
Yeah, you could think that.
Yeah, I mean, like, you would think that just, like, Catholicism and Orthodoxy has a higher representation in this thing than I would say Protestantism does, just in terms of by, you know, compared to the per capita. I have a couple of theories as to why that is, but it really kind of just speaks to what the state of the white Protestant is. The actual, according to this American religious landscape in 2020, I don't know if this is the exact census data, but I think this is close enough that we'll go with this. The white Catholic percentage of this country is 16%.
Incredible.
Or, no, 12, I'm sorry, 12%. 12%.
12%?
Yep. That is the white cat. This is according to, let's see here, what I don't know what they, source, PRRI 2020 American Values Atlas. 12% of the United States is white Catholic. The Hispanic Catholic, by the way, the percentage appears to be about... they do this weird shading that's kind of hard to read. That appears to be about, I would say, it looks like 8%, I think, with black Protestant, Hispanic Protestant. Yeah, I think that's 8% right there.
So it's like almost as much as the white Catholic.
Yeah.
Population.
Yeah. So 20%. 20% of the country is Catholic, basically. There's like a little bit higher than that because you have to include other, because like, it's not just whites and Hispanics that are Catholic. Do you know, take a guess what the percentage of Protestant, what white Protestants in this country are?
40%.
Pretty close. You were pretty close. It was, it's 30%. That's if you include both evangelical Protestant and white mainline. Non-evangelical Protestant, and I, actually those two tend to not get along with each other, but I mean, I'm just trying to make a broader point here. So 30% of this country, white Protestant. What would you guess is the percentage of unaffiliated, which is basically atheists, agnostics, and what have you, people who don't care about religion?
Like 60%.
23%. Well, this is by self-reported.
Man,
so 23%. Yeah. So like you take those. So take that 12% white Catholic number as well. That's just people who identify as Catholic. That doesn't speak to what their actual the fervor of their belief is and how serious. Like we know, there's a lot of nominal Catholics. But yeah. I looked at the number once, and that always stuck out to me because, like I said, within the scene, it always seems like that Catholics are the biggest presence in, you know, in the kind of scene we percolate in, and it just Protestants seem very underrepresented by that, and that's because of the way I hear other Catholics talk about it. It always like bothers me on some level because, and maybe it speaks to my experience of being kind of so. I mean, in my family, I do have descent from the colonists that fought for independence, but that's been very diluted over time. I'm mostly French Catholic with some Russian. That's what most of my heritage is, and it's I've always kind of felt like, even though like I wasn't raised religiously, I just kind of had that white ethnic Catholic Orthodox type thing going on, and I've always felt kind of like an outsider in this country, and it's both home and I'm both alien to it, and if that makes any sense. And so whenever I see people talk about the white Protestants, I always usually get mad about it because fundamentally the know-nothings were right. This country was taken from them. And it's continued to be taken from them. They are the most underrepresented people in this country. And given that we're all in this together now, like with what they're doing to us, it's just this is why I hate a lot of this religious fighting. I know some of the stuff is irreconcilable on some level. I don't know what to do about it, but I guess my point here is. We need to remember, especially for those of us who are Catholic, we need to remember that one. If your whole thing is like we got to make America Catholic, one, like you have a lot of work to do on that. Second of all, if the way you're playing and doing that is importing Hispanics, the fact that they are they're either worshiping death or Protestants at extremely high levels, that is not the cope you're looking for.
worshiping death. Like, Saint Death. You said there was a fucking shrine to that in Mexico City?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's all the practice has always been underground, but now it's becoming more and more out in the foreground. Now it's out in the open.
Yeah, soon you'll have mainline Santa Muerte worship. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't. I can make these empty appeals that we need to work together. We need to, like, you know, not engage in these frivolous religious, ethnic religious, intra ethnic religious disputes with one another. But I know that's easier said than done. I don't know. I guess this is just my way of, cause I was talking to the guys about this. I get sickened when guys like feel like they take that pass that, you know, to shed on Protestants that Jews give them. And they handily take that because they've gaslighted themselves or LARPing so hard into believing that this country is ever going to be some kind of like Habsburgian, you know, Catholic integralist theocratic empire of some kind. Is like, what is wrong with you? No, really, what is wrong with you? Like, all I am asking is for people to engage with reality and engage with what the actual demographics are. America was founded as a Protestant construct. That's something we're not going to be able to just, you know, ignore or easily get around as long as the United States continues to persist the way it does. That's just the way things are. I mean, this country was one of the reasons why the colonists fought for independence was because of the Quebec Act, which was going to give rights and liberties back to the Catholics because the British had basically gotten all these French Catholics under their dominion when they got French Canada as part of the, you know, their spoils for the Seven Years' War. I mean, you have to kind of reconcile yourself to that. Like, if you know, there is this strong Protestant culture, strong, and also this love of kind of individuals' heresies. If you look at the history of the burned over district in the United States, that is, you know, if you want to do an American patriot thing, if you want to talk about American folk traditions and American folk heritage, like, a lot of that's Protestant. You have to be respectful of that. And I see a lot of, I guess this is my, just me talking to other Catholics, but we have to be, you know, if you want to do an American patriotism, you have to be cognizant and respectful of that. Like, this, like, it's time to stop with the stupid LARPing about this integralist, like, what this guy is doing, like, this integralist project you think is going to happen. Things are in a bad way, and we need to confront things as they are. And we need to start from an actual assessment of what our position is and who we want to be working with. I don't want to work with Jews. You just heard that article that I read. That's not who I want to ally with.
No, you want to ally with Alexander Dugan. That's who you want to ally with. You've been exposed. But no, for real.
I'm kind of curious your thoughts, Larry, because I know you were kind of, I think, because you were kind of worried, if you don't mind me saying this, you were kind of worried I was going to be like shitting on Protestants when I was talking about the religious demographics thing. But the reason why I wanted to talk about is, like, this is what the actual religious demographics in this country look like. And we tend to get very myopic in the scene, especially because of the number of Catholic and Orthodox that are within that. And it doesn't really speak to what the actual demographics of what the remaining white people in this country are. Now, I know Catholicism is rising. I know more and more younger people are becoming Catholic. I know that there is that element there, but, I mean, the evangelicals aren't going away either.
Catholicism rising.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Even though the mainline churches are shrinking, there doesn't mean they're going to go away overnight either.
Yeah, and at what point in time, like, after, like, if the whole, like, Hispanic thing keeps going on, or, like, oh, Hispanic, Catholic, but then you were saying, like, that, like, Hispanics are, like, converting, there's this, but, I'm sorry, I keep, like, jumping all over the place. At what point in time, like, when you reach, like, peak Hispanic in the Catholic Church, does, like, the practice of the Catholic Church, like, actually change?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, like, the Amazon Synod, like, the other year, like, that was some really weird stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was conflict with in Peru, like, a couple years ago. Pachamama, yeah.
Yeah. So
well, I mean, like, we're talking about Hispanics as well. I mean, like, what do you, let's, so take Guatemala, for instance, because we get a lot of our Hispanic, you know, our mestizo immigrants come from a lot of Central American countries as well. So what would you guess the religious demographics of Guatemala are, for instance, like, what Roman Catholic versus Protestant in Guatemala?
You know, before you said that, I wouldn't have guessed either of those things, to be honest with you. So I'm just going to go ahead and say 70-30 Catholic Protestant.
Roman Catholic 45%, Protestant 42%.
Oh, so they're like even.
Yeah.
I kind of thought they were still doing like the like Inca shit, you know.
Oh, like, I mean, like again, like of... well, they, like that again, like this is all like kind of like self-reporting stuff, like how much this folk practice is also. Here's the thing, like when it comes to that, so like the Santa Muerta stuff, a lot of those Santa Muerta practitioners will also call themselves Catholic. This was an issue as well in New Orleans for the longest time, because you had a lot of people who were engaging in folk magic practices or voodoo and what have you, and like a lot of those became what, you know, what are called syncretic faiths, where it's somebody like, for example, in voodoo, one of the, they call them Loas. One, like, they use one of the Loas as an analog, for instance, to St. Patrick. So you have these weird, like, it's never like this clear demarcation with these religions. So when you're bringing these people in and they say they're Catholic, well, what does that actually mean? Are they also doing voodoo or Santeria or Santa Muerta on the side? Are they saying that, do they think they can have it both ways? Because a lot of them do believe that. Like, there is a profound, like, small O orthodox, there is a profound lack of orthodoxy among brown people when they adopt these religions. They tend to keep a lot of their folk practices with them.
Exactly. And I mean, that's like, exactly, what point does it become, like, not Catholicism?
Yeah,
for whites too. You know what I mean? Like, at what point in time? Like, but I guess with it, Catholicism, you know, coming from Rome. But I don't know. America's kind of like its own thing, right? I feel like,
How are you feeling, Larry? Are you still in the 50s, or I brought you down even lower now?
Oh no, I have to, like, I feel good. I'm still okay. Having a great good. Day. I have to piss really bad, but
okay. I didn't want to do a long show anyways. It's 20 to midnight. I was going to be done by midnight anyways. You want to just call it a night here? I mean, we really just did this so that we didn't miss a week, and I wanted to talk to you, so.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'll go ahead and go to sleep. Gonna probably do a little bit of amusement park action tomorrow again.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, man, it was fun.
Yep.
Coming on here getting a little sad in the beginning. but, you know, times were had, laughs were shared, Pokemon was discussed.
I think I'm just going to title this episode, Books Are Just White Nationalist Funko Pop.
Yeah, I mean, really, they are. It's like, yeah, I got a whole case of them upstairs. Like, I've read the first, like, 60 pages of a lot of them, but have I finished a lot of them? No. No. I've read the first, like, 60 pages of many, but... And then the thing, like, you go to the store, like, you continue to buy bookmarks, so it's like I have almost as many bookmarks as I do books.
Yeah. For somebody who's deeply suspicious of authors, you certainly do seem to, like, give them money.
Yeah. Try to, if you know somebody, right? You gotta support your local liar. I mean, author. You know what I'm saying? I'm just kidding.
breaking news from Deutsche Doggy: Pokemon the movie pause button drops Monday.
Soon.
Monday.
You gonna watch it?
I could actually probably do a pause button right now on Pokemon the first movie. I think I still vividly remember that movie.
Been listening to the pause button at work.
I'm sorry.
During I'm sorry. Well, you know, I'm sorry.
I shouldn't need to address this stuff, but guys, like, I mean, I got a lot going on. I mean, if you know, you know. if you know, you know. And it's, I mean, it's obvious also, you know, what's going on with, you know, family and all that. So I would like to, it's amazing that I can even do an episode of any show once a week at this point, but I'm trying to get back in the swing of things. I hope things calm down soon. It's really hard with the kid right now and the dog. So
could it be said that the snake has been killed for the time being? The snake is hibernating. He's in hibernation station right now.
I'm just tired all the time.
That meme is dead. 1,000 podcasts. So.
Oh yeah, no. Yes. So I have got nothing to plug. When I make content again, I'll have something to plug. And that's that. You have anything to plug, Larry?
I'm doing a show tomorrow. I don't know what time. With Jack McCracken's coming on the next episode of Hate House. He's going to come back and shoot the shit with, I think, Fisher and Rollo are going to be on with me.
Nice.
And I have an episode in that we did it like 10 days ago, but I just haven't sat down to edit it because, I mean, I'm not like super busy, kind of busy, but I'm just kind of lazy whenever I'm not working.
Every time you're going to do a show, I always like... You always have too many guests for me to try and butt on, or I'm not going to be around, so I can't. I've been trying to like sneak up on you and get back on Hate House. Should probably
shit, man. If you're free and want to, and just ask me if I want to do one. I'll like, sure. slam a couple of Modellos and sit down and do one.
I mean, this is basically like Hate House right here, so
this was far more serious than Hate House. This is a. You know, this is a.
It was third rail with Hate House characteristics.
Yeah, this is me like me coming onto the third rail is me like trying to step into like the intellectual arena. You know what I mean? With giants surrounding me, like the only time where Spectre can be considered a giant ever is when he's in the room, like talking about like reading shit with me. It's like the only time. It's like, oh yeah, you read better than me. You're also old and short, so. I don't know. That's really all I had to show was just those two things. But yeah, dude, I'd love to have you back on. That'd be fun. We can actually dedicate an entire episode to like Pokemon and Funko Pops and fucking, you know, things like that.
I'm reading the chat and I don't understand what some of them are talking about.
Oh, all right. Yay.
Yeah, they are. They definitely are. All right, I'm going to play us out. I don't have an outro. Right, I'm tired. I want to go to bed. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, good night, dude. I'm going to sleep. See you, everybody.
See ya.
Ooh.